Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 19th. Wondering this hour if you live in a neighborhood or a community where turf wars are going on. People who are organic lawn care enthusiasts pitted against those who rely on the more traditional chemical-based method of lawn care. This new grass warfare is going on in communities across the country, according to a recent article in the Wall Street Journal. One of the places profiled in it was the village of Whitefish Bay in southeastern Wisconsin. The article described how a citizens group in Whitefish Bay that wants the community to switch over to an organic approach to lawn care is hanging tags on residents' doors urging them to lay off pesticides and posting signs in their own yards that say, "All living creatures welcome." The reaction to this movement is mixed. Some people are reportedly receptive to the idea of laying off the chemicals. Others are hostile, saying what they put on their lawns is their business. Is it? Or is this a health issue that affects the whole neighborhood, the whole community? Does your desire to have a weed-free lawn stop with the bag of weed and feed? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. When we saw this article in the Wall Street Journal, I immediately thought of a guest that I talked to last spring, an environmental historian who wrote a book called American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. And I thought he might be able to comment on these new turf wars. And then lo and behold, Ted Steinberg had his own op-ed appear in the New York Times on Sunday, where he called for a ban on weed and feed products, a repeal of preemption laws that forbid local communities from enacting pesticide regulations that are stricter than federal and state laws, and he called for a debate on the merits of national lawn care legislation. Maybe we can start that debate right now. Ted Steinberg is a distinguished professor of history and a professor of law at Case Western University. He is the author of many books, including American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. His opinion piece appeared in the July 15th edition of the New York Times. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you make of these turf wars, or grass warfare, as the Wall Street Journal put it?
Well, I'm not really that surprised by them, frankly. I think the idea of a perfect lawn, a weed-free, super green expanse, has entered a very vulnerable period in its history. In part, this has to do with the rise since the 90s of green consumerism. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, I think, to buy organic carrots at your Whole Foods supermarket in the morning and come back in the afternoon and dump a load of herbicide on your lawn. I think that's got a big part to play in all this. And I also think trends that are going on in Canada, anti-lawn sentiment there, has a lot to do with why we're seeing this now.
Yeah, well, you pointed out the Canada situation in your piece. What is going on in Canada?
Well, I mean, the Canadians are essentially overturning the perfect lawn aesthetic and have been now for about 15 years. But what's going on there, effectively, is that over 120 municipalities now have passed either bans or restrictions on the cosmetic use of lawn care pesticides. In 2006, Quebec phased in the most stringent lawn care pesticide ordinance in all of North America. It banned 20 active ingredients and required the removal of more than 200 lawn and garden products from the shelves. And I think what the Canadians are reacting to is evidence that questions the safety of certain very commonly used pesticides, especially the herbicide 2,4-D, which is a very common lawn care product. 2,4-D has been, according to at least one Canadian study, that surveyed a bunch of other studies, 2,4-D has been persuasively linked to cancer, reproductive harm, and neurological impairment. And I think what the Canadians are saying is, look, I mean, whether, you know, putting a load of 2,4-D down on your lawn is going to give you cancer the next day or even in 20 years is, you know, who knows the answer to that, perhaps. But is it a perfect lawn really worth the risk? And I think, at least for these 120 municipalities, the answer to that is no.
Yeah. Well, why does our EPA say weed and feed and this 2,4-D is okay?
Well, they don't exactly say it's okay. I mean, what the Environmental Protection Agency does is to register. That's the language they use, pesticides. Various pesticides, and to do that, they essentially evaluate the costs and benefits of these various toxic chemicals. However, the benefits are rarely analyzed in any kind of stringent way, number one. Number two, the EPA doesn't test pesticides in the mixtures, say, that you would commonly find, mm-hmm. say, in a weed and feed product where you have not just fertilizer, but also more than one kind of pesticide in there. It's not as if the Environmental Protection Agency is saying these products are safe. They're not saying they're safe. They're just essentially telling people, although the message here is probably misconstrued, that the benefits, in the opinion of the EPA, outweigh the costs of using them.
We're talking with Ted Steinberg, an environmental historian, author of many books, including American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn, about the new turf wars going on across the country, the battle between organic lawn care enthusiasts and those who use pesticides or chemicals on their perfect lawns. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What camp are you in? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, coming up on 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 19th. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's John Munson in for Ben Marins. Much of American culture, economy, and in fact its spirit were rendered from the bodies of whales, according to John's guest, after 5 o'clock. That sounds interesting. He examines America's rich whaling heritage after 5 o'clock. We're talking about lawn care and a backlash of sorts going on right now toward the traditional lawn care of chemicals, using chemicals, and talking with our guest about why this is going on, whether it's a good thing or not. Ted Steinberg is the author of American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about this at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Ted Steinberg authored an opinion piece on lawn care that appeared in the July 15th edition of the New York Times. It was entitled Green Lawn, Filthy Future. And in that, Professor Steinberg, you called for a ban on weed and feed, that there should be a national ban on weed and feed products.
Well, I mean, my feeling is that weed and feed is probably one of the worst things to happen to the lawn in its brief history on this continent.
Why?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's no reason to spread a weed killer on your lawn as a matter of course, and that's what people are doing. I think, frankly, my guess is that a lot of people that are using a weed and feed product don't even realize they're throwing a toxin down on the lawn. They're focused on the feed part. Weed and feed is a combination of fertilizer and normally a pesticide, or at least one or two pesticides. Seems to me to make a lot more sense to determine whether, in fact, you have a problem with weeds and what kind of weeds they are before you go broadcasting a toxic substance on your lawn. And what weed and feed is effectively doing, because it's bundled with fertilization, is encouraging people essentially to overtreat the lawn. So, yes, I think we could take a step forward here by simply getting rid of that product.
You also thought that there should be preemption laws should be repealed that prohibit a local community from enacting some sort of pesticide regulation that's stricter than the state or federal government.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1991 that federal pesticide law did not usurp the power of local municipalities from enacting their own potentially more stringent pesticide regulations. And what that did was cause the pesticide lobby, if you want to call them that, elements of the green industry, to then march straight to state capitals all over the country and lobby for preemption rules that forbid local municipalities from enacting regulations banning or restricting pesticides that may be more stringent than those enacted at the state level. I believe there are 40 or 41 states that now have this preemption, these kinds of preemption laws in effect. And another positive step I think we could take here with respect to lawn care and lawn maintenance and would be to repeal these preemption laws and allow organizations and grassroots efforts, if they so choose and find that, in fact, pesticide is contaminating water in a particular area, to lobby for and perhaps see the passage of laws that are more stringent and regulate these substances.
There's another pun I can use, grassroots groups. Kelly in Schulzburg is our first caller. Hi, Kelly, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, you know, the biggest problem is, you know, people ain't stupid. You know, people are not stupid. They know that this stuff is bad on your environment. But, they treat your lawn, you walk by it or drive by it, for weeks you can smell it, you know? The problem is, it's got to be done through the government. It's got to be banned through the laws. People cannot accept change, but they can accept law, and that's a proven fact. I mean, we had a case in Darlington where I was the caretaker of a cemetery, and the priest there thought he's an environmentalist, and he thought, well, we could get done with these plastic flowers. You know, they're filling up these landfills, you know. Man, oh, man, you thought you were trying to steal one of their children. I mean, all hell broke loose. It was crazy, you know. That's the problem with our people in this world, is they just cannot accept change.
All right. Don't want to accept change when it comes to lawn care, but we will if the government tells us to. Do you think so, Professor Steinberg?
Well, I mean, I think really the issue here comes down to regulation. We're living through some extraordinarily anti-regulatory times, if I can call it that. I mean, if you go back in the American past, really not that long, to the late 60s or so, I mean, when the environmental movement was in full throttle, you saw a real surge in regulatory initiatives, quite unlike today. I think we need to go back 30 years, rewind the film, as it were, and put in place regulations, and that environmental regulations, and that applies, frankly, whether it comes to lawn care or flood hazards or what have you, if we're going to deal sensibly with our environment relations with the natural world.
Yeah, and you do in your piece also say that we could at least think about Congress phasing in a federal ban on the cosmetic use of lawn care pesticides over the next few years.
Yeah, well, I mean, or at least let's have a debate about this.
Yeah.
I don't want to come off doctrinaire and anti-pesticides. Pesticides can be, there is a use for them. If there's a public health problem, for example, if there's a problem with malaria or what have you, I could imagine that there could be some public health rationale where you would want to have access to and to, in fact, use pesticides. The question here, or the issue here really is, you know, are we going to just simply allow people to throw the stuff around in a kind of willy-nilly fashion, which is what you're getting. I mean, your caller talked about smelling it. Yes, I mean, it's all over. Where I live, you can't take a walk in my neighborhood without, tromping through the stuff, which is spread all onto the sidewalk. And then, of course, it's on the soles of your feet. And, you know, the next thing you know, it's inside your house, especially if you don't take your shoes off when you come in the door.
Thanks to Kelly. Patrick in Waukesha is with us now. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. How's it going there?
Very good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I was a sod farmer for many years, and then I took my farm to what I call more traditional methods. And so I had an issue with your use of the word tradition. When I went back to traditional farming methods, I abandoned the chemicals. And the things I learned about sod, when I went from sod, I went to pasture management with sheep, small herbivores. And the whole trick for a good lawn, of course, is mowing. And you really want to have a weed population in there. What you find are weeds correct soil fertility. When we've gone and altered the soil fertility, the weeds come in there to restore the balance. You know, I really am enjoying the traditional methods. For one, they really allow the children to be there. If you want a good lawn, you get rid of your gas mower, get a nice small reel mower, and put your kids on it. A 10-year-old can push a reel mower around. You know where your kids are. It's healthy for them, and they can participate in the process. So the traditional method goes back to having people involved in it.
And a point taken, Professor Steinberg?
Well, I mean, I think it sounds like we agree. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just a question of what we're calling traditional or not. I mean, I think what your listener there is arguing for is something that I talked about in my book and that I continue to argue for, and that's what I call a low-maintenance lawn. I don't think, frankly, I mean, look, you can poison the waters of whatever lake as easily with organic products as you can with traditional lawn care, synthetic products. So I don't see that divide as being that important. The real issue here is the rage for perfection in lawn care and over-treatment, which is why I advocate for a low-maintenance lawn, a polyculture, not a monoculture. In my own lawn, I've got bluegrass, rye, plantain, clover, moss out there. You have to mow correctly, it's true. My lawn looks great from across the street. I just wouldn't get up to it with a microscope, maybe. But there's nothing wrong with it. It's easy to take care of. I fertilize a couple times a year. I don't irrigate it, and I don't use pesticides on the lawn. There's absolutely nothing wrong with my lawn.
Patrick, thanks very much. Albert in Westby. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I kind of have my own little rivalry with my neighbors. They seem to be mowaholics, where they'll mow three times a week and spray the chemicals and do this and do that, and I'm the total opposite. I don't agree with any type of pesticides, and I don't even fertilize, but I'll tell you right now, I mow maybe once a week. Sometimes I don't mow for 2 weeks, and my grass, it'll get long, but it'll fall over, and you can't barely tell unless you walk in it, and I pretty much leave the clippings there, and my grass is, you know, I just mowed yesterday, and my grass is 10 times greener than theirs. So, you know, it's sometimes, you know, these people, they do too much work on their lawn, and they make them reliant on the chemicals that they put on it. You know, and you got to let the stuff grow, and just, you know, the weeds will get, you know, pushed out, but once you let the grass grow. So That's all I had to say.
Thank you very much, Albert. I'll get our guest to respond to your method of lawn care coming up after the news. News from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio is up next, and then we continue talking with Ted Steinberg, author of American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Thursday, July the 19th. It's 6:36. We're talking about the quest for the perfect lawn. Our guest has written a book about that, American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. He is Ted Steinberg, environmental historian and a professor of history and professor of law at Case Western Reserve University. He wrote an opinion piece that appeared in the July 15th edition of the New York Times on lawn care, lawn maintenance, saying that maybe we should take some cues from our neighbor to the north, Canada, which has strict regulations on the use of pesticides or cosmetic chemicals for lawn care, for cosmetic lawn care reasons. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. In the piece, he says that this country should consider a ban on weed and feed products. that preemption laws should be repealed. Preemption laws prohibit local communities from enacting pesticide regulations that are stricter than state or federal governments. And he also says it's about time we had a debate on the merits of national lawn care legislation. Perhaps Congress should phase in a federal ban on the cosmetic use of lawn care pesticides over the next few years. What do you think of this? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're also talking with him about the new phenomenon of turf wars that are springing up in communities across the country where neighbors are pitted against neighbors in terms of what they put on their lawns. There are the organic advocates who are trying to pressure their chemical-loving neighbors to stop putting pesticides on their lawns. And one of the communities where this is going on is the village of Whitefish Bay, which was profiled in a recent Wall Street Journal article. Anyway, we are welcoming your participation in this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Does the way your lawn looks, is that very important to you? Do you still use chemicals like these weed and feed products? How come? Or have you gone to a more low-maintenance approach or organic approach? Ted Steinberg, we heard from a caller just before the news break who said that he is having a little bit of a turf war with his neighbor. His neighbor uses all the chemical products, and he does not. He says he doesn't use any pesticides, doesn't use any fertilizer, and doesn't mow very often. He says his lawn gets a little bit long, but you can't really tell because it just kind of falls down. And that thick lawn crowds out the weeds, so He's not having any problems. What do you think of that?
Well, I think he's got a low maintenance lawn. I mean, when you fertilize a lot, you cause the grass to grow, and you have to mow more. When you mow more, especially if you don't mow correctly, and you mow the lawn too short, you increase the evaporation rate, and that means more water. Well, when you put more water on the lawn, and if you don't water properly, and you tend to overwater, which many people do, I see that happen all the time, well, then you leach nutrients from the soil, and guess what? Well, you have to go back to the store and buy more fertilizer. When you buy more fertilizer, you put it on the lawn, well, then you got to mow more. I mean, it becomes a very quickly, as you could see, I'm caricaturing the process, but you can see very quickly that it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle of increasing maintenance, and this is maybe good from the standpoint of the people that are selling the lawn care chemicals, but from the homeowner's perspective, I would say, well, don't you have better things to do with your time, number one? And from an ecological perspective, I think it's not a good thing. I mean, I can't really see how it can be. You can grow, certainly in my neck of the woods here in Ohio, you can grow turf grass quite well with two applications, 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet a season, essentially, two or three. There's no need for the four, five, six. Mm-hmm. We have people here putting 8 pounds of nitrogen down there per 1,000 square feet a season. That's a lot of fertilizer, and it's just not necessary.
Maggie in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning. I'm so glad you're having this topic. Mm-hmm. We're surrounded by chemical addicts on both sides of us. We always see those little white signs from ChemLawn, and it just drives us crazy. We do the same thing as your previous caller regarding just keeping the lawn at least like 3 inches long, and it looks just fine. And also, I was hoping your guest could clarify organic lawn care. It seems to me that a lot of the companies are going green, so to speak, to make their customers believe that what they're doing is safe. And it's my understanding that organic just means that it contains carbon and nitrogen compounds, and that when they can dissolve, that sometimes it's just as harmful. And I was hoping you could clarify what really is truly safe organic lawn care and what is just fooling the customer.
Professor Steinberg?
Well, I don't believe, with respect to, I'd have to check on this, but I don't believe the term organic is a regulated term, at least with respect to to its use in lawn care and lawn maintenance. I mean, it's another story, of course, when we're talking about stamping an apple or a pear organic. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's my guess is, there are probably some companies that are, that are perhaps not legitimate companies and doing God knows what. I mean, some of these companies are also have a multi-tiered approach to lawn maintenance, where they have no chemicals. Some of them are also using a certain amount of pesticides, at least initially, to kind of get things going. And that's hardly an organic approach to lawn care at all. The problem, of course, is that, I mean, if you really have a thing with weeds, there really aren't very, there's simply no, organic alternative short of standing there, and weeding by hand or with some device. And that's very, very, very labor-intensive. I just think my own sense is that you can get very, very, you can get tied up like a pretzel here, worrying about whether what you're doing is organic or not organic. The single biggest problem, as I said earlier on today, is really over-treatment. Whether you're using organic fertilizer or not, the issue is fertilizing properly and not doing it too much, because you can have the same problems with eutrophication using an organic fertilizer that you can with a synthetic fertilizer. I mean, the water doesn't know the difference.
Yeah, I thought I read in some of these articles that one of the products that the people who are advocating organic, they're turning to is some sort of corn gluten fertilizer. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, it's not a fertilizer product. I mean, I've never used it myself, but supposedly it acts as something of a herbicide.
Oh, I see.
I believe. Mm-hmm. Whether this really works or not, I don't know. I mean, I've not read any scientific studies of this. They may exist, but I don't know. I have any firsthand knowledge of them.
And I just illustrated one of your points is that there's confusion over what's the fertilizer, what's the herbicide, what's the pesticide. There's confusion over that, isn't there?
There is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is that's an important point that you make, because one of the problems we have here is a question of horticultural literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, this is a little complicated. I mean, you need to sit down and think about this and maybe even read a couple of books to understand what's going on out there in the yard, as it were. And I think the issue here is that because people are not horticulturally literate enough, this is an opportunity, of course, for the chemical lawn care industry to step in and say, look, you don't need to worry about whether this is a fertilizer or a pesticide. We'll take care of the problem for you. And the next thing you know, you're signed up for 6 applications,
mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, good for their bottom line. And they're just doing their job. These aren't bad people in the least. The problem is that they have a responsibility to their shareholders to produce a return for them. And they can only do that by selling more chemical applications. Whether it's a good thing ecologically speaking, I would argue it's not.
And our caller mentioned that she sees those ChemLawn signs all over the place, and I certainly see those little signs in my neighborhood too. But it brought to mind that company actually took that part, it's True Green, not ChemLawn anymore, because they didn't want the chemical name in their company name.
Yeah, I'm surprised it took them so long to mm-hmm. To make that change. Frankly, I mean, I believe it only happened very, very recently. But the truth of the matter, though, is I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe you could argue they were it's truth in advertising. It's chem that they're selling. Why not have it in the name? I don't know.
We're talking with Ted Steinberg, environmental historian, author of American Green: The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions about some turf wars that are going on in communities across the country, where there's a backlash of sorts going on against those neighbors who use chemicals on their lawns versus those who do not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Ted Steinberg, environmental historian, professor at Case Western Reserve University, author of American Green, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn. And our next caller is Stephen Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm from Appleton. I've had a little run-in with the city lately that I think is kind of funny. I mean, you're talking about these chemicals and everything, and they were talking about how they're going to have to treat stormwater runoff because of the amount of grass clippings and pesticides and fertilizers that are being washed down into the rivers and things. And, you know, I thought, great, you know, I don't use any of this stuff on my lawn. I cut my lawn long, it stays green, I don't have a bunch of weeds, I handful what I do. You know, I'm against the use of the fertilizers. But then just the other week, the city comes along and they basically sent a contractor over, you know, to get rid of grass underneath my hedge, you know, which killed the hedge and everything else. You know, what are the laws and the ways the cities do things? I mean, what are you supposed to do, spray the chemicals, you know, around everything? It's kind of like it's their policy on one end, and then they're trying to do something about it on the other. It doesn't make sense.
Steve, so the city applied chemicals on your property under a hedge because it thought the grass was too long under a hedge?
Yeah, the grass was too long under the hedge. They did not put chemicals on. That's what they told me to do, and I told them I don't do that. So they sent a contractor out who came out and removed every other hedge plant, mowed it down so there was room to put a lawnmower through it. And he took down my my wildflower garden. They cut up my irises. You know, I have gardens around my house. You know, so there isn't so much grass, so it isn't such a hassle. But they did quite a number on my whole yard.
Yeah. Did you have complaints from your neighbors by any chance, Steve, saying that your lawn was too wild looking or something?
No, all my neighbors, we know each other. They I was going to take the hedge out last year. I'm not, you know, terribly concerned that I took it out this year, but my neighbors talked me into leaving it. They said, well, gee, it's only been there 4 years. It takes a while for it to get thick enough, and you know, so you can shear it and make it look like a hedge. I have a good rapport with all my neighbors, no problem whatsoever. But the, you know, the city, you know, they get one complaint from who knows who, and, you know, they came out and they say they looked at it and they called it unkept because of the grass. I also have tulips planted in a hill coming up my house, thousands of them. And, I don't mow that until the tulips are done. I just, you know, knock off the weeds and keep it just grass. You know, so they called my house unkept. Well, by the time they came out, of course, that's all mowed and all done with. The tulips are over, but, you know, then it was the complaint about the hedge.
Yeah.
You know, neighbors just are sticking their noses, you know, into other people's business and forcing them to use chemicals, or the city's doing it, or, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to spray everything.
Yeah. What do you think of that comment, Professor Steinberg?
Well, I don't know. It sounds like part, I think it's kind of stupid,
mm-hmm.
but frankly, it sounds like there's some very obsessive officials there in charge of, what was it, Appleton?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that's about. It's very hard for me without sort of seeing the property to know, but the whole idea of, you know, this concern about unkempt, I don't know where that, the caller used that language, I don't know where that comes from, but if that's just silly, I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah. Sean in Burlington, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I define weeds as things that I don't want there, so I don't really have any weeds. In June, I had some beautiful clover. I had purple, white, and yellow clover, and I didn't want to mow it. I had to because I was having a graduation party, but I didn't want to because it was a beautiful carpet of clover. I never fertilize. I mow 6 or 7 times a year at the most. In fact, I just mowed last week, and now if it doesn't get real wet, my grass will go dormant. I won't have to mow again probably till sometime in September, early October. And I've replaced much of my lawn with native prairie, and some of my neighbors have followed suit. So I spend maybe an hour and a half mowing my lawn every couple of weeks when I do it in the spring. Meanwhile, my neighbor on the other side is reducing his 8 acres of woods to lawn. And he spends hours and hours every weekend, whether it needs it or not, on his $5,000 mowing machine. And I just walk around in my prairie and watch him and smile.
Yeah. Professor Steinberg?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a wash there. I mean, your caller's got the, you know, he's obviously a man after my own heart. I mean, that's clearly what we should be doing. I mean, go inside, read a book, and spend time with your kids. Enjoy the prairie. Enjoy the clover, which, by the way, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I admit it was the 50s, but companies were selling products that included clover. There's a product that Scott's company used called Clovex, which was clover. People were, you know, trying to sell it and grow it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a weed at all. It didn't become a weed till later in that decade. I say it was a wash, though, because obviously he's taking a low maintenance approach to the lawn, and then on the other hand, the neighbors tearing out the woods and, you know, buying some sort of tractor mower to put in a, you know, eight acres of who knows, perfect turf or something like that.
Yeah.
Horrible.
You know, we talked certainly much more last spring when your book first came out, but we haven't so far this hour really talked about what is behind this obsession for those people looking for this perfect turf and needing this emerald green lush lawn that they spend hours and hours and toiling away at. What's behind that that compulsion obsession?
Well, that's a complicated question. I could answer it historically, but maybe the best thing to say right now is just I think, first of all, people have a sense, at least in suburban, I mean, if you're not in areas where there's 8 acres, but in where I live, where the lots are smaller, much smaller, we're talking less than a half an acre lot, I think there's a sense that having a good lawn is a badge of civic virtue. People don't want to insult the neighbors with a season full of bad grass days. That's at least my experience. I think what we really need, frankly, is a new kind of ethos here, where, you know, having a shaggy lawn that, you know, isn't perfect is in fact a sign of civic responsibility. That's what I'd like to see happen. I mean, it's been very dry here in Ohio over the last 2 months or so. I'm not irrigating my lawn. My lawn's gone dormant, just like your caller's lawn has.
Mine too.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the world is not going to end. If you get down on your hands and knees and look at those grass plants individually, you'll see there's still a little bit of green where the blade meets the soil. That plant is still alive. It's dormant, and it'll come back next spring fine. And sure, some of the plants will die, and I'll have to throw down some grass seed or what have you. But there's just brown is not such a bad thing.
Yeah, my lawn is brown, but I've got to do something about the green weeds that are still that are still popping through. I need a thicker lawn. Sierra in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for this program. Not only is this a matter of concern with these toxic chemicals getting into our water systems, but also these toxic chemicals are affecting children and pets. The notification that is being used to warn people that these toxic chemicals are on the lawns are these little flags. And these flags, the children pull them up, the weather knocks them down right away. They're totally ineffective. And so pets and children are wandering over the lawns almost immediately after these applications are done. And I was wondering if there are any studies suggesting any problems with this in terms of cancer to pets or any other problems to pets and children. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There are studies, I believe, a couple that looked at the effect of 2,4-D on dogs. My sense, I haven't looked at this at these studies in quite some time, so I can't say exactly what they revealed. But with respect to children, even the EPA, if you go on their website, I believe now says the truth, which is that using these kinds of pesticides are especially a problem for children because their organs are still developing, their bodies are still developing, and they're at a stage where exposure to these sorts of pesticides is actually worse for them than it would be, say, for a grown adult. So it's really important if you are going to be using these kinds of pesticides to keep the kids away from them and from the treated lawn.
Yeah, and we only have a minute more to go, Professor Steinberg. But you think that right now we might be seeing the tide turning on the use of chemicals on our lawns?
Yeah, I think so. I think, as I had said earlier, I think the perfect lawn has entered a very vulnerable period in its history. It has to do with a lot of things, as I said, trends in Canada, the emergence of green consumerism, and in a way, I think this has been a very heartening show. Your viewer, at least, who knows, maybe the viewers are self-selecting, but there's so many people called in and said that they were taking the low-maintenance approach. So, yeah, maybe the tide is turning.
Yeah, well, they're above-average public radio listeners. So thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, Ted Steinberg, environmental historian, author of American Dream, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Lawn, and his opinion piece on lawn care appeared in the July 15th edition of the New York Times. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser and to Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.